thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Dust Sign. My name is Dustin Mater, and I'm a visual artist. I've always been fascinated with the creative muse and its source in which it comes from. Tonight's episode is a good friend of mine. They call him the Buffalo Man. His AKA is Marcus Ammerman. So thank you for coming on tonight, Marcus. Really appreciate you taking the time to come on tonight.
You bet, Dustin.
So I'll just start off with our questions and we can kind of visit. Who are you and what do you do?
Who is Marcus Ammerman? Well, he's a complex character. That's off of Steve Martin's The Jerk. So David Johnson says that. Well, I'm not Buffalo Man. You know, let me make that clear. You know, he wouldn't like you associating him with me, you know. I'm just a tool he uses to get his point across. You know, he doesn't really acknowledge me. I don't think he really likes me that much.
So you're more of like a vessel for him.
You know, he just wears me like a
a man suit.
And he doesn't really talk, you know. I mean, like, he would rather be doing the interview, but, you know, he just kind of grunts and snorts and, you know, nods his head, which you wouldn't go to see without a video component anyway. And I haven't seen him for years.
Yeah?
You know, I don't think he was treating me well. I don't think he had the proper respect for me. You know.
So you're a bit of a disgruntled worker for Buffalo Man.
Yeah. I'm just a tool for him, you know. Voice box. And I get kind of charged up by his ideas, you know, when he kind of possesses me.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that energy. I feel that sense of mission that he has, because he's speaking for nature, for the natural world, you know. He's intense, and, you know, he sees a lot going on. It's not good from his perspective, you know.
Yeah.
And me, I want a steak, you know, some steak and fries, something like that. I'm not really that concerned, you know, but I do empathize with him. And when I do tap into his energy, it is quite invigorating.
Right on. It sounds like it's a very powerful connection.
Anyway, I didn't tell you who I was, but I told you who I'm not.
That's true.
So I'm a simple man, a bead worker by trade, I would have to say. I might think of myself as a multimedia artist. You know, I'm really curious. I'm interested in doing a lot of things, learning a lot of things. But even lately, I'm thinking it's all in preparation for navigating the other world, you know. You know, what good is that doing me here? Not much. You know, it's all for after the other life. You know, so, like, you have to be creative. You have to be calm. You know, because we don't know what the other side's like, if there's another side, you know. So,
yeah.
So I know those things. That, like, it might be to a large extent a creative environment, and that we're what we experience after death might be largely a function of our cultural understanding and our personal belief system, and even a lack of knowledge and a lack of belief can also come into play. So in that sense, it's sort of a creative thing in that we create, you know, what happens to us after we die. And since we have no senses, right, we will no longer have bodily form.
Yeah.
You know, that it's all just thought and emotion. And thought might be the part that keeps you in limbo, you know. until you surrender to the emotion, you know, and go towards the light, you know, do you really make it? See, I started to think of this because I went to a funeral for Uncle Ernest this last week, and one of the speakers was talking about afterlife experience where they die and come back, and he was talking about the sense of calm. And then I get home and the show's on, and it's talking about the same thing, you know, and they use that same term, sense of calm, you know. But I'm interpreting this, since we have no senses for, like, lack of sound stuff, it's more the lack of judgment in the other world.
So it's just more of an impulse.
Yeah, it's hard to know what the other world is like. It's easier to try to figure out what it's not like, you know. Stuff that can't be transferred.
That's a very... That's a very Meshkolkian kind of idea, and the more and more I'm reading about antiquity, Meshkolkian aesthetics, you know, it talks about like how all life, you know, have to pass through the hand of the Creator to go to the White Dog Trail or the River of Souls, which is the constellation of Orion, and the River of Souls is the, you know, the Milky Way, but it said that. In some of these new books that I've been reading, one of them is Tattooing with Great Needles. It was saying that some of these, a consensus of these different Southeastern tribes was that if you still had works that unfinished in life, you would have to reincarnate and go into the underworld and be reborn until you get it all right. Almost like Bill Murray's Groundhog's Day, until you got it all right. And then you went to the upper world with the ancestors.
Yeah. But you might be for your own decision to do that. I don't know if there's a judgment that will do that. I think that might be our own sense of something that keeps us bound to this plane.
Could be.
But it's the eternal subject, you know. Always
it's a good way to
end.
I think that's one of the nice things about being an artist is that we regularly venture into the unknown, and we come back and we try to make illustrations or whatever our art form is, and to describe what we just saw. I've heard some folks call that the epiphany, and I've kind of talked about how that is a... artists get the epiphany, and it's real easy for it just to stay in their mind and go, that's cool. But it's hard to kind of push it out of themselves so that other people can feel it too. Because if it's well done, the people will grab that feeling as well. And then it means you got it out of your body. And then you ask the question is, where does that come from?
You're in a world without limits, you know, you got to know your way around. You got to know how to handle yourself, you know. So I think you can get insights into that through art and the experience of art on this planet and in this lifetime.
And overall, you would say that's what you describe in your work. So that would be a very good answer for your first question of what is it that you do? You share that... understanding or whatever you're gleaming and through some of your ideas in your works.
Yeah, it's all about the sharing, you know. I'm doing like long-range reconnaissance, trying to find things. I'm trying to look for clues. And then bring it back and share it with the people, you know.
Yeah.
Departure, fulfillment, return. Your basic hero's journey. You know? It's a classic formula.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask the next question, and we'll see what happens. You've really kind of opened up to some of the other questions, I think, and like what inspires you that we've asked some other folks, or I've asked some other folks.
Here's I was thinking about my process.
Yeah.
Right before that, you know, and it's been kind of occurring to me lately, is that, you know, when I'm presented with a medium or a project, I think of the exact opposite. I think of, well, what would be the furthest from what would make this successful? You know, what defies the very medium? You know, what's the furthest reach I can go out on this thing? You know, and I think that's where my mind works. It's always like, you know, the craziest idea, the most out of it conceptual thing. And usually this is a formula for not selling any work, for not having your work popularized. It can still be popular in museums because of that process, but it's not sellable because it's hard to relate, because it's the opposite of what people think. And I think that's where my beadwork came from. It was like a rebellious act where the opposite of geometric, colorful designs is realism, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't learn to draw well. I didn't learn to depict things in a realistic manner and then transfer into paint and then use that God-given talent and skill to transfer it into beadwork. I took a shortcut, you know, with photos, you know, like my ancestors could have for 100 years before me. Beat right over that photo, you know.
Yeah.
And get my effect. So just by accident, I stumbled upon something that was commercially, financially successful, you know.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Process, you know, it's like it doesn't always hit, you know, it must be like a slot machine. And like the other day, I was posting on Facebook, you know, an April Fool's joke, right?
Mm-hmm.
The most crazy kind of thing I thought of, like, I'm from Pendleton, right? They make blankets there. You know, the worst blanket in the world is the smallpox blanket. There's no worse blanket than the smallpox blanket. So I say it's an April Fool's joke that I'm designing a smallpox blanket for the Pendleton Woolen Mills.
Holy crap.
They're going to market it as the perfect gift when you want to say, I want your land. So it's the most opposite idea. But it's such a good idea, you know. It's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
So, like, all of the responses I got were like, you should really do that. You know, this would be good, you know. And, like, someone sent a microscopic form of a very colorful design pattern of the smallpox virus. And it would make a good blanket. And you never know when something's going to hit like that, when it's just so bad, it's good. You know, when, you know, my brain system makes me consider a lot of possibilities. You know, there's a lot of neurons firing.
Yeah.
And it usually wants to go to the furthest reach, you know. And occasionally that's interesting, you know. But I'm noticing this is a pattern.
Yeah.
You know, just like you notice other patterns in your life. You know, I might notice patterns in my relationships, you know, or other parts of my existence. But, like, as you grow older, as I have, you do notice patterns, even when you examine your own work and self.
I've begun to notice motifs and aesthetics from my subconscious after the fact. A lot more as of late than I have before in the last couple of years. You're right. I guess the longer you're in this, the more you start seeing patterns. There was like a, when my mom passed, there was a symmetry. She died on the 9th month, on the 10th day at 11 p.m. And this, she was the same age as she was in the year that she was born. And that was always kind of her thing, was like that kind of symmetry of numbers. So it's just interesting, the loops. I guess to get back on subject, what are you doing to be a good ancestor? In my opinion, I feel that you are doing a kind of a path where, you know, artists have to find a way, and if they can't find the way, then the way is truly lost, and that to do anything less would be a dithering as Rome burns, as what a wise teacher once said.
I think everyone has different roles and goals, and even artists, you know, there's just such a myriad of, you know, reasons we do it, why we do it, where we're coming from, what we have to express. You know, even though people tend to jumble us all into one, you know, incompetent, short-sighted grouping, you know, it's quite a varied array. And so mine is more exploration, you know.
Yeah.
Trying new things, failing a lot. You know, it's like, maybe that's a good, maybe it's good for me, or maybe not anymore, to have a fear of success, you know. It can be something to watch out for, you know, if it stops you from growing and creating and evolving.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the moment you, I don't know, the harder I push, you know, the better things seem to get. And I like that John Wayne quote. I keep on thinking of it, you know, where he says, if you're going to be dumb, you better be tough. And I feel that that's true for, as an artist. If you're going to be an artist, you better be tough. Because if you're not getting kicked in the head, and learn to dodge it now and then, you're going to get it, and it'll be way worse if you've never had it happen to you. But that tenacity, I admire that in you and your tenacity of what you're digging at. And I guess that also drives into my follow-up question, is what are you working towards? But, you know, it seems like you're definitely
tenacity
working.
Tenacity and curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, I think they can go hand in hand. They're a good team. You know, because I'm always trying to find out new stuff, you know. It's like I love trying new mediums. I love combining different mediums together and knowing that I have skills in different things. You know, it's like so many different ways to fail, which is good, and which I have, but you come to a certain level of competence and enjoyment of just being able to create on a lot of different ways, you know, in your mind in different forms. So, you know, it's like if there was an Olympics of Indian art, I would want to be in the decathlon. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, I'm the best at one event, maybe, but, you know, I'm good at all these other events, you know, where I could still place, you know. Maybe that just displays my competitiveness or something. And maybe, you know, once you start analyzing the artist's mind and what, you know, what's similar to people who dedicate their life to it or make a living off it, or, you know, it's a good subject for, you know, any artist. You know, what makes you tick? Why do you do it?
Yeah.
Why do you take the pain? Why do you like to suffer? Are you suffering for a reason? Did you think you'd get successful?
I always felt it was like a Faustian deal you made as a little kid, and you're still held to the bargain even though you were a little kid when you signed it. And if you stop making it, it's almost like you get like the punishment by default, but that if you give in to the energy or whatever you're channeling out, you get this kind of... the closest thing I can describe it to is just like a sense of awe when you create and you're actually in a nice rhythm that you cannot get in very other, many other forms. At least for me, when I'm creating, I'm in, I finally find that rhythm, and it's sublime. It's, and that's what I always try to work towards. It's the only thing that seems to work for me.
Yeah, you never know how it's gonna come about, or what inspires, or what turn of luck. You know, because I was watching this Gary Shandling documentary, and he was like a in college level physics, and you know, kind of plotting a life like that, and he just decided he had to do, you know, stand up or wanted more or something like that. And I was the same way with like math. And I pursued that because I was good at it. You know, I got strokes for it in high school. You know, my mind could work abstractly in that universal language of math, kind of.
Wow. That's cool.
But well, for me, I probably took acid in, and that changed my whole thing. Just a brief glimpse into the other world through drugs, which occasionally happens. They're bad in general. I'm not advocating them. Don't get me wrong, listening public. But but I think occasional breakthroughs into the other side through drugs happen. anyway, I bet your whole mind's spinning now, huh? What's your other next question?
Well, that kind of covers question. That kind of works to, that worked through that other one of what are you working towards? What are some new projects that you're kind of thinking about, you know, this the House of Mystery kind of arts collective, the digital online presence, or is it...
Well, you tell me about that. I don't know enough.
Well, you know, it's this kind of digital gallery type of idea that, you know, a million digital galleries, I'm sure, have happened and are happening. But a collective of... interesting artists that are, you know, 21st century artists, and part of this Meshkokian Rococo kind of art movement that's blossoming, and it's really turning into something. More and more people are starting to see the art, and I that's kind of what it's kind of working towards as a platform for who better to speak for ourselves than ourselves, in a collective voice that maybe, you know, other cultures and other art scenes have not been acquainted with.
I really like the idea of it because it sounds like you can somehow skirt around like taxes and stuff like that.
Well, and we would never do that.
Support artists in this country. In France and Paris, they name streets after artists. They name buildings and streets after crooked politicians in this country.
Oh, they have one named after Blake Shelton in Ada.
One, okay. One. Road. One. Look how big our country is.
Well, what do you hope for the future, creatively in the art scene? Like, what do you hope, like, people will grasp from what you've worked towards and your legacy? You know, what are your hopes for the future that whenever they're teaching the Marcus Ammerman, lecture in class about, this movement of art, what is it that you hope, will be kind of realized from what you're working towards?
22 or 23 when I came up with my idea of photo beatalism. You know, so I've been kind of riding that wave, you know, since then. Maybe my next achievement will be my new movie I want to make. It's like the Karate Kid, only with hoop dancing.
The hoop dancing kid?
There's like a hoop dancing academy by Steve LaRance, who actually has one, kind of. And like, he's like the Dragon Kai group, right? And then my nephew, Monty Cinqua, who has his own touring groups that travel internationally, you know, he's like the Mr. Miyagi, where like they have to plaster on the side of the Hopi building, you know, new layer of plaster instead of the wipe on, wipe off, right? Right. You just stick with a winner and then Indian it up, man. Put on the rest.
So we're going to have that sequence. You're the best, never going to catch you. Da, da, da. I don't remember. I just remember the rhythm of that old song from that movie.
I don't remember that one. See, I want to watch it now and take notes. Come up with the script.
A modern day Akira Kurosawa's telling of Macbeth.
The deadline for Sundance, like it was a script writer's, native script writer's workshop, but for serial or sitcom or, you know, like TV, basically, I think. Which is kind of less daunting than the whole feature film indie world.
Oh, I think that you would be a much better...
Plus you're exposing it, Indian life, to the masses. And we have no exposure, you know. Other people are getting theirs, so they don't know that Red Lives Matter too.
You know, that's one of the things I really enjoyed when we were up in Toronto. I really enjoyed that, you know, for all the nonsense that they perpetrate to the Northern brothers and sisters up there. You know, they have two cable channels. We don't have that at all in this country. It's like the most I can find consistently is like on National Public Radio.
And you go to other countries like New Zealand, they have two stations for the Maori also, man. We're being kept down by the man here, man. Why don't we have the tools to get the capital to make our own movies, tell our own stories? We've got great leaders to tell stories about. But like, they make stories about like Jeffrey Dahmer and John Wayne Gacy, the most horrible people in the world.
It's true. Why? Well, that's why we got to have to make our own.
That's how I'll be remembered, as a voice crying in the wilderness, you know. Why? You know. That upward shot where they're looking down on you and you go, Mendoza!
Well, brother, I appreciate this conversation. This has been awesome. And I'll talk to you real soon. Thanks for calling in tonight, Marcus. I really do appreciate it. And thank you for everyone tuning in. Until next time, Chapisa Lecho. See ya.